Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to head inside the film room and break down the tape. The FantasyGuru.com weekly matchup podcast is on. Here's John Hansen and Greg Cosell.
Welcome to the Week 8 matchup podcast here at FantasyGuru.com. I'm John Hansen, and I hear an echo, and that's not good. So I'm going to change it up a little bit here, and we have had some technical difficulties.
We apologize for those. Hold on 1 second. We apologize for those technical difficulties that we've had here. We have switched to a high-fidelity podcasting sound, and Blog Talk Radio had some issues with that last week and didn't really tell us that they were having some problems. So, therefore, we had no podcast last week. We do remind you to check out FantasyGuru.com. After today, today is November 5th, after 1 Eastern, we will have a special offer up if you're thinking about subscribing, and it's basically subscribe now for 2016. I can't believe I'm saying 2016, but I am because that's the next year on the docket here. Subscribe for 2016 at the regular rate of $29.95, and then get the rest of this year free. So check that out at FantasyGuru.com after 1 p.m. Eastern today. And without any further ado, we'll bring in our guy Greg Cosell to help us break down week number 9. Greg, good morning.
Good morning, John. We ready for Johnny Football?
Oh, we're ready. We're excited. We're excited.
You sound so excited, you probably can't control yourself.
You know, and it's funny because I was saying this on the radio. It feels like Manziel's been in the league like 4 years, doesn't it?
Or is that... It might. You know, it's funny. I was thinking about this because obviously everybody, and being serious, I mean, he doesn't have a lot of experience. We don't know what he is or what he isn't. Everybody has their own opinion. I try to be as objective as I can. You know, I think you're going to see one of two things tonight when you talk about the Bengals defense. Because when you have a quarterback who's not advanced or refined yet, like Manziel, in terms of reading coverage, going through progressions, one school of thought is you play a lot of coverage. You know, in other words, you rush four and you play coverage, which has basically been the Bengals' MO mostly this season. They've not been a high percentage blitz team. And then you make him sort of go through progressions, have to read, have to make tight throws. That would be one approach. The other approach is you go after him. And even though he'll make a few plays with his movement, because that's sort of in his DNA, if you get him frenetic and chaotic early, you know, it's hard to beat a good disciplined defense like Cincinnati if with the quarterback being a frenetic, chaotic guy.
If you play coverage, would it help the fact that they simply cannot run the football? Because that's been a huge problem all year for Cleveland.
That's a great point, John, because I think ultimately Cincinnati will feel that they can stop the run with seven in the box. They don't need to start bringing defenders down. And they will. I mean, every team does that anyway as a matter of course. But as their game plan, they don't have to say, hey, you know, it's not like playing a big-time back where you absolutely feel that you need an extra defender in the box literally on every, you know, normal down and distance situation. I don't think Cincinnati will feel that way.
And this defense has been good, not great, but they did get Vontaze Burfict back. And maybe no surprise, I mean, maybe no coincidence that they kind of held down the Pittsburgh Steelers offense a little bit last week. Of course, Big Ben was rusty. You saw the tape of the Bengal offense last week, correct?
I saw bits and pieces of it. I did not see all of it.
Oh, okay. Because I thought you had a couple of points on, you know, that was certainly Andy Dalton's worst game.
Oh, it was. And you're right about that. He wasn't as sharp. But I think, and again, we've had this conversation about Dalton, and it's so much of its perception because there's clearly people who believe, hey, wait till he gets to the playoffs, he'll fall apart. You know, and that I don't get into that conversation, as you know. But I also think you can look at that game last week and say that he made throws at when he had to make throws. And he, you know, you could argue the touchdown he threw to Green, you could say, gee, he was open. But, you know, that's in the red zone, tight red zone. Those are tighter throws. He was very confident pulling the trigger on that throw.
The Browns won't have Joe Hayden, and they won't have Dante Whitner. and Tashaun Gibson is limited. I'm thinking that, and I could be wrong here.
That's tough. And Hayden's not played well this year anyway.
Right. Yeah, I'm thinking a Jeremy Hill game. If for no other reason, then, you know, Andy Dalton in this matchup, Greg, as you likely know, has been horrendous. I mean, you want to, like, for fantasy, he's averaging
right.
like 25 points a game. Put it into perspective this year. I'm guessing that's off the top of my head, actually. With 25 is a nice number, a real nice number. In fact, I'll get the actual number right now. Yep, there it is, 25. He's averaging 25 points a game. In this matchup, the last four games, he's averaging like 9 points. I mean, it's unbelievable how, 9.9 in four games. I mean, what the hell? And that's unbelievable.
Well,
I don't get that.
There's two parts to this on the offensive side, too. You know, we talked about Cincinnati's defense. The feeling could be by Hugh Jackson, hey, they're down Hayden. They're down Whitner. They're going to play backups. They don't have a big-time pass rush. Let's throw the ball. Let's get up early and make the Browns and make Manziel have to throw it. You know, he's not ready for that kind of game. So, you could look at that approach, too. What if they get up 17-3 in your, you know, early second quarter? You know, then all
right.
of a sudden Cleveland can't run the ball. They're going to have to put the game in Manziel's hands, you know, with wide receivers who, you know, for the most part have actually done very well given who they are. But, you know, then you get into that whole thing. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure how Hugh Jackson will approach this game. He may feel with his weapons and with that defense, with Cincinnati, with Cleveland's defense, that he can get out in front early.
Well, there's a lot of different ways they can win this game. I mean, let's be honest, but I did have two other things to cover, and then we'll move on. Number one was with Manziel in there. I've been saying it. That's got to be a killer for Gary Barnidge. I mean, Gary Barnidge has been one of the biggest surprises,
yep.
Greg, that I've seen in the fantasy world since, like, Kurt Warner. I mean, I maybe that's hyperbole, but, I mean, he's rivaling Rob Gronkowski in terms of production. I mean, that's all there is. It's all you have to say. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Well, he's obviously just a better player.
Yeah, sure, because fantasy is everything.
right, exactly.
But don't you think Manziel, I mean, I know he connected with Benjamin a little bit. I mean, but if you're in the fantasy world, you would really lower expectations for, like, Barnidge and Benjamin now with Johnny Football in there.
Look, you have to understand, Manziel started one game this year. Okay, they won the game. He completed 7 balls. The second play of the game, which was a well-rehearsed, well-practiced play probably since Wednesday when they first started practicing. That's when it's the second play of the game, it's game plan. They went deep. It was a shot play. They got exactly the coverage they want, and he made a great throw. But he completed 7 balls, you know, so after they got ahead, they pretty much hid Manziel. He was not really a factor in the game. I don't believe
right.
that's the way tonight's game will play out. He's going to have to drop back 30 times plus, in my view, in tonight's game.
People are wondering what's up with Jeremy Hill this year. He was a high pick. We were very high on him, for
yep.
sure.
He's
averaging
were. Like, I was too.
Yeah, he's averaging only 3.3 yards a carry. I mean, to me, Greg, the simple answer is, he's just not getting enough work to get kind of rolling. I just feel like he's one of these guys. He's a bigger back. He's a downhill guy. He's a kind of a volume guy. And Hugh Jackson's kind of hinting, like, get ready for that because he's going to, you know, the weather's getting colder and all that. I mean, is it overly simplistic to say, well, he's just not getting enough work to get into a rhythm this year?
Well, as we've discussed, he didn't run well early in the season. I think he's run a little better the last couple of weeks. I think Hugh Jackson hinting that is just what I talked about a number of weeks ago when I told you that as the season progressed, he would have to be part of this offense. They know that. So now it's how do you sort of ease him into that and get him ready for a game or two or three down the stretch where he might have to carry 22, 23 times.
Makes a lot of sense. They're built to win offensively and excel in a variety of ways. And, you know, first couple of months, throw it all over
yep.
the field. Last couple of months, let's, you know, keep Hill fairly fresh and start, you know, making him more of a foundation. I think that's going to happen. Moving on to the Rams and the Vikings. I wanted to ask you about the Ram O-line because they offensively don't really have all that much at all. I know Nick Foles should have had Kenny Britt on a big play last week. And they're doing a hell of a job using Tavon Austin. We've talked about that. The
yeah.
O-line there, I know pass protection, they're probably well below average, but are they doing a good job blocking, or is that maybe a case of good play calling and scheming? Because, geez, you know, Todd Gurley's had room to run.
He has had room to run, and I think it's been a combination. They're certainly better run blockers than pass protectors. And in pass protection, they're clearly a work in progress. They really struggle with one-on-one blocks. The run game has been helped by scheme because what they've been able to do with scheme is really impact second-level defenders and great backs. And I think Gurley, look, I'm not going to sit here and start making Adrian Peterson comparisons. That's irrelevant. The point is he's a highly skilled back with great traits, but he's a guy who can get through the first level of the defense. And if the second level is impacted by scheme and play calling, then obviously that allows him even then to get to the third level without being touched. So their O-line has been, I think, probably solid in the run game and needs a lot of work in pass protection.
Yeah, and Minnesota has a couple of injuries. They may not have Anthony Barr, which will be obviously notable, but how do you see, what are your thoughts on the Viking front seven matching up against this running attack? And Sharif Floyd is, I guess he missed last week. He's also a little iffy. Let's say they don't have Floyd and Barr. I mean, that's pretty significant for Gurley this week.
I think Barr is becoming a very good player. I think that this is a game, because of their defense, St. Louis probably goes into every game, and Minnesota's not an explosive offense. So I think St. Louis goes into every game with the idea that we run the ball because the score is not going to get away from us. So, you know, the issue they've had is they've not run a lot of plays, which is why Gurley, you know, has only had in some games 17, 18 rushes. I think if the game turns out to be a more of a normal game, I think you'll see Gurley carry the ball 27, 28 times.
Yeah, and he's getting a lot of games where it's just like it's kind of over, you know, in the third quarter. And they give, like last week, and they give Trey Mason a lot of work.
Right, which was actually very smart.
Yeah, sure. I feel like we have we need a weekly Teddy Bridgewater update because he's a young quarterback who has not had a brilliant season thus far. But based on your tape study, it seems like proving, but we're still kind of left with the fact that he's a limited thrower. Your thoughts on how Bridgewater is playing right now?
I think that's ultimately, and again, I don't think that's going to change. I think that his ceiling is not as high, let's say, as a Derek Carr. I think that he's a somewhat limited thrower. And look, he had two big plays last week late in the game, and they were somewhat lucky. He shouldn't have made those two throws. They were poor decisions. Diggs, a 20-yarder on the tying TD drive, and Johnson, 35 yards on the winning drive, were two throws he should not have made, and they were both caught. And so his numbers were better. But, you know, I think ultimately Bridgewater right now, I don't think it's going to change dramatically, certainly not over the next month, month and a half. I can't speak to what he might become next year, but I don't think he's a high-ceiling player from a physical talent standpoint.
We'll see about Chris Long, who's missed some time here. Robert Quinn also on the injury report. But this Ram defense is still pretty darn good. The quarterback's not getting a lot yards per attempt, 6.5. They're giving up fewer than one touchdown pass a game. I know that it's a beatable secondary, but just real quick, I'm very interested because I thought Ogletree was really doing well. But we love the replacement here. I mean, this is the player, Mark Barron, who they got in a trade. He's been a disappointment, but he's now playing an outside linebacker, Greg, and you'd like what you see there with Barron.
Well, I think he's, you know, essentially, if you want to call him an outside, whatever you want to call him, whether it's big nickel, if you call him a safety, or if you call him an outside linebacker, but I think he's played really, really well. He's utilized in multiple ways. He's a blitzer. He matches up at times man-to-man on the tight end. He's far better in the run than you would think. He stood out playing the run. He plays downhill with aggression, tenacity. He's tough. I think he's become a key component of this defense.
And Stephon Diggs is just taken over. I mean, he has literally rendered everyone else in this receiving corps worthless in fantasy. It's unbelievable. I mean, seriously, I mean, Mike Wallace had four targets last week, zero catches. This is a really impressive emergence here from Diggs. We know he's a former five-star recruit, but, you know, I mean, there's no end in sight in this. This kid is just playing with a lot of confidence.
Yeah, well, you know how I feel about him, and he's a really good route runner for a rookie.
Yeah, there you go. Moving on. Here's one. Green Bay at Carolina. And I know we have a lot of thoughts about the Packer offense and Aaron Rodgers relying a little bit more than some other quarterbacks like Tom Brady, relying a little bit more on plays out of structure and all that. We know the receiving core isn't that dynamic at this point. Here's the dilemma, though. You know, I look at the numbers, and Aaron Rodgers in this matchup last year was like perfect. And granted, they had Jordy Nelson, but he completed 86.4% of his. He only threw 22 balls. He completed 19.
I remember that.
You know, he threw for 255 and three touchdowns, 11.6 yards an attempt, which is ridiculous, which I guess begs the question, and I don't know if you know the answer. We actually talked about this. You know, is there something about the way the Panthers play defense that the Packers were able to just dominate? Or, do you seem to think that they'll have that kind of success? Let's phrase it that way this week in this matchup.
No, and look, I'm not going to sit here and count Aaron Rodgers out by any means, but I think overall the Green Bay pass game this year has not been as good, despite the fact that Rodgers has 15 touchdowns and two picks. I don't think it's been anywhere near what it was last year. I think they've struggled a bit at times. They certainly did last week. They're not going to face the same philosophical style of defense in Carolina that they did against Denver, when Denver played a ton of man and they blitz a lot with a lot of different multiple fronts and looks. That's not necessarily what Carolina does, but I don't believe that this game will play out like last year's game, John. I think the teams are in different places. I think last year, I think that game took place when Carolina was really struggling. And now, look, they've won 11 regular season games in a row. Carolina's playing with a lot of confidence on defense. I think they're one of the most disciplined, fundamentally sound defenses in the league right now.
Yeah, right. And you're not loving Eddie Lacy on tape lately.
No, I'm not. I'm not. Yeah. You know, you mentioned this a number of weeks ago, how big he looked, and I really looked at that this week, and I agree with you. I mean, he almost looks, a little too heavy to me. I mean, he's a big back and a power back, but he looks a little too heavy to me right now.
Yeah, and the movement is maybe not quite as just a step slow, and that could explain why he's struggling a little bit this year, but I still kind of think he's going to heat up as we move along, but we shall see. And moving over to the Panther offense, and it's a pretty simple offense to figure out. You know, as you've said for weeks, even going back to last year, it's a very diverse running attack. Mike Shula doing a pretty good job. They're going to run the ball every week, and they're pretty committed to Cam being a huge part of that, which of course is dangerous, but it's been very effective. Then they throw it down the field, and you sprinkle in some Greg Olsen as a movable chess piece, and there you go. I mean, that's it. How do you see Green Bay's defense matching up to all this? They have been getting run on lately, which is bad news. And Sam Shields is banged up, Greg, and didn't practice on Wednesday. He may not play.
Well, it'll be interesting because Dom Capers, he's a schemer. That defense is more of a scheme defense than a lineup and play defense. And I think when you play this multi-dimensional and diverse run game of Carolina's, John, I think you have to line up and play a little more. You know, we always hear the term assignment football when you play, option-type offenses. And I think that's what you have to do. And I think when you scheme so much, that hurts you. So, sometimes you just have to line up and play these defenses, play these offenses, and be assignment sound. So it'll be a really interesting matchup. And their pass plays predominantly, they're a shot play. Obviously, we know Olsen's their number one guy. We don't need to go over that. We all know what he is. But beyond that, they're a shot play pass game. They take their shots off their run game foundation. And I like the fact that they take a number of them during every game.
Yeah, no question. Moving on to Washington at New England. And New England is, they do what they do. They've got a defense that is pretty talented up front. And they're hanging in there in the back end. They scheme it up pretty well. Not a divisional matchup or anything like that. I thought they were just absolutely brilliant last week against Miami. In retrospect, probably should have seen it coming. You've got a divisional opponent that they know well with limitations. You knew that they were going to put the clamps down on it based on those limitations, and that's exactly what they did. Not sure about this one here, but – there's no reason to believe that New England won't be able to do what they want to do here against Washington. The secondary's been banged up. Breland didn't practice already here this week. They don't have a great pass rush. I mean, Culliver's still a little limited. So is D'Angelo Hall, but it looks like they may play. You know, defensively, the Redskins are going to have their hands full here against New England.
Without question. I would expect New England to put up a ton of points. You know, and you know, New England has three matchup players that are really difficult. We know about Gronk, Edelman, and Deion Lewis. There are three difficult matchups within the concept of how New England plays offense.
Now, for the Redskins, you know, you look at Kirk Cousins, at least I do, from a fantasy perspective, and playing from behind, one-dimensional. I like the Patriot defense in this one, obviously, but, you know, do you think they can still have some success if they get Deshaun back? Because now you're looking at Deshaun, who has got to be accounted for, Jordan Reed, Garcon, Chris Thompson's going to play the tailback there, gets a lot of third down work. I mean, they're basically going to be at full strength here, and they do have weapons.
Yeah, and I think they'll be playing from behind. So I think that they're going to have to throw the ball. And you're talking about fantasy. Cousins could put up big numbers. It would not surprise me to see him throw two or three picks in this game. But I think he'll put up numbers because they will have to throw the ball.
Yep, no doubt. Let's move on. Tennessee at New Orleans. And I know you've seen the tape for Tennessee. So, it's New Orleans. It's New Orleans in the dome. So everyone in the fantasy world needs to use Breeze, Ingram, likely Cooks. Snead is certainly looking good, as is Watson. But this Tennessee defense, they don't give up a lot of production. I mean, explain why they've been decent. I mean, what do you see on film that, you know, granted it's probably a function, too, of who they've played, but they don't give up a lot of points, Greg.
No, I mean, I think Jarrell Casey's having one of the best years by a defensive lineman in the league, probably unknown because Tennessee's not very good overall. I think their front seven has gotten better. Their issues potentially are on the back end, which obviously poses a problem in this game. They're going to have to be able to rush the quarterback and get Breeze a little uncomfortable. And if they don't, then I think their back end's going to struggle. And you know this from fantasy, but Ben Watson has become a really important component in this Saints pass game, and he's not used like Jimmy Graham. He doesn't really line up outside. He's more conventional in how he's utilized, but he's really become an important piece, particularly between the numbers.
Yeah, I just made the observation. He's used like, you know, an athletic tight end receiving tight end would have been used like 10 years ago. I mean, he's not like used like this new age Jimmy Graham hybrid type of a guy, but still. And by the way, the Titans, McCourty and Ree Wilson, I can never pronounce that damn last name.
Bleedy Ray
Bleedy
Wilson.
Ree Wilson, yeah. It's a tongue twister for yours truly.
Ray, just think of Ray, like, you know.
Oh, there you go. You're right. Yeah, I am in broadcasting, Greg. I should be able to get that right. But I can say this. When I do call letters, I say W. It's not W, Greg. It's double U, just so you know.
W.
That's right. I got a 4-year degree in communications, and that's pretty much my takeaway from that. It's double U. It's not W. Anyway, Ray Wilson, even that's hard, didn't practice yesterday, so they could.
They're going to be down. If they're down in the secondary like that with McCourty, who came out of last week's game, then they're going to really struggle, because then you're dealing with, you know, Sensabaugh, who struggled a bit this year, both playing outside and in the slot. You'll get Cody Riggs, the rookie from Notre Dame, who's actually looked pretty good as a slot player. I don't know if that's where they'll keep him or if he will play outside. Now, Paris Cox will be back this week, and he did not play last week.
Right. He practiced fully. So Breeze and friends looking good, despite the fact that Tennessee hasn't really given up all that much. Now, again, if you look at the game logs, they really haven't played anyone outstanding. You know, the Falcons got them for 251. You know, Hoyer did put up numbers last week. You know, played Buffalo. They played Cleveland, you know, Tampa. So, yeah, I mean, it's not a bad matchup by any stretch. But let's talk about the Saint defense. And look, Mariota's going to return, not going to have Harry Douglas. You've got the new coordinator there, head coach, whatever, Mike Mularkey, talking about running. Look, he's a run-heavy guy. Two tight end sets. Antonio Andrews, for now, is their guy. And it looks like they're going to actually put Dorial Green-Beckham out there more. Maybe they have to with Wright.
They have been the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, right. What is it about when you turn on the tape with New Orleans, their defense, like, how are they this bad? It's amazing what they're giving up here lately.
Well, I think their secondary has issues. I think Delvin Bro has played well, and I think that beyond that, Vaccaro has played reasonably well also. They use him in a variety of ways, but I would make the argument based on tape study that Browner and Bird are not quality NFL starters at this point, and I think that's been hurting them a lot. They haven't been able to generate any kind of consistent pass rush. So, I think they're a defense that struggles. Now, again, I don't know if they're going to struggle this week because Tennessee's O-line, which has two fairly high first-round picks in Taylor Lewan and Chance Warmack, last week against Houston, which has a very good defensive line, obviously, is their O-line was really, really bad last week. One of the poorest O-line performances I've seen on tape this year.
Wow. And I think you made the point, too, that Antonio Andrews, that kid's not going to make anyone miss. He's not going to create. He needs help from the O-line. So keep that in mind.
And the only thing to think about going forward, John, and then we'll move on, is if Mike Mularkey does sort of want to establish what he did in Atlanta when he was there with Michael Turner and a lot of two tight end sets, I'm not going to sit here and tell you Antonio Andrews is a great back. He's not a great back. But I think if the O-line can block well, and that's a big if, a back like Andrews can gain yards if they're close in games and he gets 20 carries. You know, like I said, I mean, he's not going to rush for 1,500 yards. But if you stay committed to the run game, I think he can gain some yards.
But if I'm Mularkey, I am looking at David Cobb maybe for, week 11 on or something. I mean, give him a couple weeks because I think he's a lot more talented than Andrews.
Could be, yeah. I mean, I would agree with you. Now it comes down to how he feels about it.
Yeah, and Cobb apparently was a little heavy this week, so that's certainly not a great sign there. But we'll see about David Cobb. But for now, again, Antonio Andrews is going to get the ball here. And by the way, this could render McCluster a little useless because McCluster, the way he was being utilized, that doesn't seem to fit with what Mularkey wants to do going forward.
No, McCluster will not be the feature back under Mike Mularkey. That's what you can guarantee that.
Miami at Buffalo, and this Bill defense, it's a head scratcher here because they have given up numbers. We do still like the talent, and now we've got a matchup that we've seen already this year. Kyle Williams may not play for the Bills. You know, Miami's offense, I guess it's a tough one. It's a tough one to figure out. I mean, it's a week-to-week proposition. Would you say that's a fair point with Miami's offense at this point?
Yeah, I think, since they made the change, they obviously had two really good games. Then they came out last week against the Patriots defense and were pretty poor. So I don't think we know what to expect. We know what they're going to try to do. They've made some changes, which I think are positive in the long run, and they had success with that early. But we don't know, if they look, Lamar Miller, there's still a question as to what he is. Is he truly a back you can build an offense around, or is Jay Ajayi going to start getting more carries? That's a question. He's more of a, he's a bigger back. So I think there's still a bit of a work in progress under kind of a new approach and new coaching staff.
Yeah, and we'd like to say that you make it a point to get Miller going, which they probably should here, but they weren't able to do that last week. Now, that said, I don't necessarily see the Bills equipped to light up the scoreboard and maybe take Miller out of the equation. So under Dan Campbell, this is only his fourth game, and they have run the ball in two of the first three. Maybe they're able to keep the score a little close and give Miller the ball, and then now you're left with a Bill defense that doesn't rush the passer all that well, right? And it's not impossible to complete passes against Buffalo. I mean, that's my bottom line here. Wouldn't you agree there?
Yeah, I mean, that's true. Buffalo's defense has not had the look necessarily of what we think of a Rex Ryan defense, and it surprised a lot of people, including myself. But, the one thing we do know, and we talked about this earlier this week, John, is – Rex's defense has a lot of parts to it, a lot of moving parts, and we just don't know in his first year with a new team. We don't know if how intelligent the players are, if they're picking this up. Because the one thing coaches will not do, they don't want to get burned by big plays. So if they don't feel that back end players can do what's required, they're going to be more simplistic in their approach.
Now the Bills are down Cam Wake, which is a killer.
Yep.
For their pass rush. You got
you
McCoy.
Mean the Dolphins. You said the Bills.
I mean
down.
The Dolphins. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
You've got McCoy coming off. I mean, he looked really good. LeSean McCoy did, Greg, in their last game. I know you saw that tape, and now he's coming off a bye here. So I would imagine we'll see a healthy dose of McCoy. You've got Carlos Williams back, Tyrod Taylor back. What do you think about this Miami defense without Cam Wake, without that pass rush? Is that where it should all start for them? Therefore, if they lose a lot with the pass rush, they're going to be more vulnerable?
Possibly. I mean, I think this team essentially was built on its front four. Obviously, early in the season, they did not play well early. They started to play better. Wake came on. Vernon came on. Sue has still not been, I'm sure, what they expected, but he's certainly, you know, a good player. So I think this defense was built on its front four, and that's a big, big loss. I mean, Wake, at his best, he was a big-time pass rusher. Rarely talked about, John, but a big-time pass rusher.
Oh, I know. I mean, that's kind of what I'm thinking here. I mean, without that, now you've got a beatable group there on the back end, other than maybe Brent Grimes, who's on the injury report and practiced fully. Miami's a tough one. I mean, people are going to be wondering about Tannehill and all that. We've got him, like 13 this week. He did throw for a lot of yards with volume in that first matchup, but he also threw three picks. Let's move on to Jacksonville at the Jets. And Jacksonville, maybe this is an offense that doesn't have a huge margin for error. I'm a little concerned about this one. I think clearly you'll see Revis on Allen Robinson, Hearns against Cromartie. The Jets got run on last week, so they'll probably be pissed off. You know, with Yeldon, I'm thinking maybe this is Julius Thomas' time. I mean, this is probably the best way to attack this defense, Greg, is getting Julius Thomas going.
Possibly. It makes sense to me. I really think the Jets defense will play well this week. They have good players. Obviously, last week was a bad performance all around. It was one of those games. They all count, so you can't totally disregard it, John. But this is a good defense with good personnel. They're coming home this week. They're playing an offense that's really not that consistent, that still has offensive line problems. I would expect the Jets defense to have a really strong performance this week.
And they're going to get Ryan Fitzpatrick, and
yep.
I guess we should presume that, you know, he's good enough to play and good enough to play at his normal level or close to it, and this is certainly a very good matchup against Jacksonville. Their defense seems to be, you know, earlier in the year we're giving them credit. Oh, they're disciplined, you know, and now it's the sample size has grown, and now we're left
with
the
fact that
they don't
have a lot of good players. You know, they're an execution defense without a lot of good players. They're
right,
not a scheme
right.
defense. They're an execution defense, and they just don't have the players right now.
Everyone on the injury report, actually, for the Jets.
Yeah.
Fitzpatrick, Ivory, Marshall, Decker. So they are banged up, which could keep this a little bit closer. I have to see about Nick Mangold, because he missed last week, and that was obviously a big loss there. So let's move on to Oakland at Pittsburgh. This is unbelievable how the Raiders are coming on, and I did not like Latavius Murray last week, and I think that was – no, I hated him last week, admittedly. I buried him in the rankings. I gave him 39 yards rushing, and I told people to trade him. And lo and behold, that was the best he ran all year, Greg. What did you see?
I couldn't agree more. I thought that he looked more decisive running downhill. It was the best he's looked, as you said. He looked quicker. He showed a little more lateral agility, more downhill burst. That's the best he's run all season because, quite honestly, John, and we've talked about this, you know, you had him as a fantasy guy because of volume, and he's their back, so that's not going to change. But I don't think he looked very good until this week. And this week was the first week where I thought he looked like he has a chance to be, you know, a solid back. I don't think he has a skill set to be a great back, but in fantasy, if he's your guy and he's going to carry anywhere from 16 to 23 times a game, he's going to put up, you know, numbers.
Yeah, I had him pretty high, and we pushed him because of volume. But I also thought that we were going to see that guy last week all year, you know. So, because I thought if you get the volume and you get that back from last week, now you're really looking at 1,200 yard rusher. You're looking at 8-9 touchdowns. You know, 35 catches. Maybe he gets there. I mean, he's actually right now exactly where we projected him. In terms of where he stacks up with the other running backs. But this Steeler defense, and look, we can talk about Derek Carr and how they're expanding everything. I liked how they got Andre Holmes involved last week. They still want to get Clive Wofford involved, and Cooper's a stud. Crabtree's a great fit. But this Steeler D has been, I don't want to say stingy, but it's not a great matchup for an offense right now in Pittsburgh. They stopped the run pretty well. They've actually got a pass rush, Greg. What do you think about the Raiders matching up here in Pittsburgh?
You know, as much as I like the Raiders' offense, and I really like Carr's development, obviously Cooper, I thought Cooper really was outstanding last week. He didn't have any trouble at all separating from Revis. But I think this is not a good matchup for Oakland this given week. I think the Steelers' front seven has been way better than probably people thought. They're really good with their pressure concepts. Keith Butler's doing an awful lot with his blitz concepts. Obviously, their issues can be in the secondary. But I think that the Raiders are going to struggle a bit in this game. I really do. I think their O-line, which I thought played its best overall game of the season last week, I think they have a really tough assignment this week.
That O-line is better blocking for the run than the pass?
Well, it's not an overly athletic O-line. That's the thing.
Right.
I think
they're
going to face a team that does a lot with blitz concepts, with second-level players, third-level players coming. I think this is going to be a tough game for the Raider offense.
For Oakland, Khalil Mack is on the injury report, but I think the expectation is that he'll be able to go, but that's obviously a big-time storyline. And this Raider D, again, they've been pretty good. I mean, they've been really good against the run. They're only giving up 2.8 yards a carry to running backs the last 3 weeks. They do give up a ton of catches, and I think that their issues still are on the back end. With a game under his belt, I can see them coming out slinging it, especially with no Le'Veon Bell. I can see him throwing a ton of balls to Brown, Martavis Bryant, and Heath Miller. I kind of like the Steeler passing game in this matchup.
Yeah, I mean, Ben was obviously rusty last week. He will be better this. See, there's no question. We talked about the Jets' defense will be better this week. The Steelers' pass game will be absolutely better this week.
What do they lose without Le'Veon Bell? I think you lose some receiving ability for sure and some versatility. How much of a drop-off is it, though? Because I do like D'Angelo Williams, and I think for fantasy he's going to be fine. I have him as a top 10 back the rest of the way.
Well, you're talking about production. I mean, he's not the same back as Bell, but I think in terms of overall production, you're going to lose probably some in the pass game. It's a different kind of pass game. They're not going to split Williams out. They could throw screens to him, and he's caught some screens. But
sure.
It's just but I think in terms of running the football, they're still going to line up and run the football. It's not as if they're not going to run. D'Angelo Williams is a quality back, John. You know that.
Yeah.
You know, he's not as good an individual player as Le'Veon Bell, but I don't think their offense changes dramatically, to be honest with you.
Right, yeah. Giants at Bucks, and let's talk about Jameis real quick, up and down still. He hasn't thrown a pick in a month, so he's got that going for him. Yeah, but you still have, and again, he's still a rookie. He's not even halfway through here his first year, but you still have some issues there with basically a lot of the stuff you saw on tape at Florida State, you know, that elongated motion and then the footwork. What are you seeing on tape with Jameis?
Yeah, he's played much better the last couple of weeks. Obviously, he's not turned it over in his last three games. But I'm still trying to get a feel because he clearly has some deficiencies with his – just he's a slower-footed player. Now, whether that can change, you can work on that. Will he ever be a true quick twitch guy? No, he won't. But you can certainly work on that. It's probably an off-season deal for that to happen. But I think that when it's defined and he knows where to go, I think he's pretty smart. The touchdown he threw this week to the tight end Cameron Brate was high level quarterbacking by Jameis. So He definitely has, he has strengths and he has some weaknesses. And it's just a matter of if the game presents itself as in which the weaknesses can come out, I would bet that's not going to be the case against the Giants defense.
Vincent Jackson didn't practice yesterday, so we'll see. But it's not looking great for him. But it is looking optimistic on Austin Seferian Jenkins. And we know that they're very thin a receiver. And, heck, if Seferian Jenkins plays and Jackson's out, I'm sure Mike Evans is going to draw Dominic Rogers-Cromartie. This is a good matchup for Seferian Jenkins, Gray. I mean, this secondary for the Giants, especially at the safety position, I mean, you should be attacking them, correct, with a tight end like Seferian Jenkins?
Yeah, I mean, look, the Giants have significant weaknesses. They can't rush the quarterback with four, and they're certainly their safeties, Collins and Merriweather, are not very good in coverage, and Merriweather has some mental busts as well. I believe he made the mistake on the Colston touchdown this week where Colston was wide open. So the safety position is a real concern for the Giants in pass coverage.
Now, on the other side, the safety position is a concern for the Bucs as well.
Without
they're
question.
Giving up massive numbers. Now, unfortunately, we may not see Larry Donnell, Greg. I mean, Larry Donnell didn't practice with a neck.
No.
He's iffy. So, I mean, but for the most part, they have thrown the ball well. I mean, Dwayne Harris getting involved. Reuben Randall still on the injury report. Beckham Jr. is a stud. But this Tampa D, what do you see when you watch them? Because I don't see a great pass rush. And again, they're giving up big time numbers.
Yeah, they don't have a great pass rush. Ultimately, they don't have the defense that Lovie Smith wants because he doesn't really have the four-man pass rush that he'd like. And we already mentioned the safety position. And even at corner, they're playing with some retreads like the Mike Jenkins guys who, you know, Jenkins has always had talent. He's a former first-round pick. But, you know, I think theoretically, I would look at this game and feel like the Giants can move the ball.
Yeah, I think for sure they can do that. Let's go to Atlanta at San Francisco, and the Niners are going to go with Blaine Gabbert. You know what's going to happen? I think Blaine Gabbert is going to have an optimistic showing. People are like, "Wow, look at this! It's better than Kaepernick." But the sample size will then grow. How many times do we see it with a young quarterback or a replacement guy? They have initial success, and then it levels off. And the Falcons don't have a good pass rush. I'm not endorsing anyone for the Niners, but it can't get any worse than what Kaepernick was doing, right, Greg?
No, Kaepernick was so locked up mentally, John, he couldn't play. I mean, this move had to be made. It probably should have been made a month ago, but it was made now. Look, the one thing with Gabbert is he's a pure pocket quarterback. He'll drop back, hit his back foot, and the ball will go somewhere. I mean, I think you'll see a lot of short passes. You'll see a lot of – I didn't mean that as the way it came out. I mean, they'll throw a lot of short passes. He'll throw a lot of, you know, 5-6-yard passes. The big question with him and the reason he's in San Francisco as a backup and not a starting quarterback for Jacksonville after being the 10th pick in a draft – is because the longer he's in the pocket, he can't function. He's not a strong pocket player. He starts to perceive and anticipate pressure, and he can't function with people around him. But I think you'll see him drop back, hit his back foot, and the ball come out. And you'll see that early. And I think that can work possibly for a game or two, and then people will start to game plan specifically for him once they see where he is in his career. And he'll be probably very similar, I would think, to the way he was.
Yeah, and you still like the Niner run defense, which will be critical, obviously.
I do, out of their base 3-4. I think that, you know, depending on how much they're in their 3-4, I mean, they're playing at Atlanta, which lines up with a fullback, Pat DeMarco, on the field more than any other team in the NFL. So likely you're going to see what we call 21 personnel, two backs with Atlanta, and you'll see the 49ers in their 3-4. And I think they've played the run pretty well. I don't know what the numbers say, but I think they look good on film doing it. Their front three, I think, has played well versus the run.
They give up 8 catches a game to running back, so if Freeman has trouble, they can work him into the give him the touches that way. They're actually giving up 4.4 yards a carry the last 4 weeks, San Fran, which isn't awful, but
no.
That could be a function too of just one matchup that I'm not recalling right now, but that's what the numbers say right there.
They gave up a long touchdown run this week, too. To be honest with you, other than the Gurley 71-yard touchdown run this week, they played the run very well.
Yeah, there you go. That'll skew the numbers right there. In fact, let's take a look here. Now let's move on. Next game is, and by the way, start Julio Jones, hashtag analysis. Denver at Indy. And we know Denver is nasty on defense. They basically have it all.
You know, somebody, I can't remember who it was, but somebody I highly respect compared the Bronco defense to the 2000 Ravens defense. I don't think that's a ridiculous comparison. This defense is really good at all three levels. Probably the most overlooked, really good player on this defense is linebacker Brandon Marshall. You know, no one talks about the linebackers. They talk about Ware and Miller, and they talk about the secondary with the three corners. But Brandon Marshall is a really, really good player in this scheme. This is a really good defense. It's the perfect mix of talent and scheme because Wade Phillips does a lot of scheming.
And they're playing very well together as a team. That's the other thing.
They're not just individual players. No, they're really, really good. And you know, everybody looks at safety and figures, you know, that's a problem. I think in this defense, for what they ask him to do, and they ask him to do a lot, I think Ward has been a really good player.
Yeah, but I will say, and we've talked about this, if there is, you know, one area where you maybe have your best chance for success, I do think it's your tight ends, and you do have Rob Chudzinski now taking over. I mean, so it's a difficult situation. I guess if you're the Colts, you're just hoping that your defense can play well against Peyton Manning and keep the game relatively close so you can still rely on Frank Gore, because if they go one-dimensional here, they're done. They got no chance in this matchup.
No, if they're forced to throw, they're going to have a really hard time because they won't be able to protect. And quite honestly, and I'm telling you right now, and it might be, you know, something people aren't aware of, but, you know, I sit and watch this every single week, and I watch the Colts every game. T.Y. Hilton is having a hard time getting open versus man coverage. He had a very hard time getting open against Delvin Bro of the Saints this week when the Panthers did play man. And many zone concepts do become man, as most people know. But Hilton had a difficult time with Josh Norman. So they're going to have to, you know, Rob Chudzinski, he's going to have to scheme concepts, whether it's stack, bunch, you know, whatever you want to call it, and whatever concepts you're talking about, he's going to have to scheme man beater concepts. And they haven't done a ton of that.
Yeah, and I think I'm looking at the tight ends. I got to tell you, I'm looking at Fleener and, hell, maybe even Dwayne Allen. By the way, T.Y. Hilton in two matchups against Denver in the regular season going only back to 2013 has averaged 11 targets a game, but only 3.5 catches for 34 yards, no touchdowns. So they have handled T.Y. Hilton in the past. You couple that with the fact that he's struggling a little bit this year, it's a little scary for the Indianapolis Colts. And last week I actually kind of liked Andre Johnson, not this time because Denver's got that great depth in the secondary.
Well,
you got Harris Arobi.
Here's what I think could happen in this game, John, and then we can move on. I think you might see two tight end sets with the Colts. But in response to that, I think you might see the Broncos, which they've done, play with three corners and one safety, okay? Because I think that they're going to feel that Fleener is essentially just a big wide receiver and that they're going to line up a corner on him and play man-to-man. You know, whether that corner is Bradley Roby, whether it's Harris, whether it's whoever, it could be Talib, no matter who it is, I wouldn't surprise me if they go with three corners and one safety as their base, you know, out of their base 3-4.
The real question for the Colt defense is, will Vonta Davis play? And he is on the injury report. I think the assumption is he'll go, but we'll see about that one. I would assume, Greg, if Vonta Davis goes, that they'll man him up on Demaryius, which means I like Emmanuel Sanders in this one. He has been terrific for the most part this year. Didn't have a big game last week. And Greg Toler, he has not been as good, nearly as good. You know, he's been hurt, but Toler was really good last year, and those two corners on an island were very effective. It's not really the case this year for the Indy D.
No. And the one thing we know with Peyton is, you know, he's going to throw the ball. If it's man coverage, he's throwing the ball. And their pass game last week was so based between the numbers, and Manning was so good making those throws. The numbers last week when he threw the ball between the numbers on the field were 12 for 14 for 195 yards.
Mm-hmm. How about the running attack? I saw some signs of life here. I think everyone did. The O-line seemed to perform a lot better, and I thought C.J. Anderson looked pretty darn good as well. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I mean, I think that overall they made a couple of big plays. Guys, you know, on those plays with Hillman, with Anderson, they looked better. They still need to have more – the numbers were good, but I think they still need more sustaining consistency in the run game.
And I'm not giving up on Anderson as that sustainer. I still am skeptical about Ronnie Hillman. I just think Ronnie Hillman should be I view him as a change-up. As a complimentary guy, give him 8 to 10 carries, a couple of catches, and then call it a day. I don't see him as a feature back. Do you?
Probably not. I mean, certainly not if you want a back to carry 20 times, which, you know, that's been Kubiak's history, is he has a back. But keep one thing in mind. No one saw Justin Forsett as a feature back until last year either.
No, we did, Greg. You told us about him 9 years ago. You said he was a mini Maurice Jones-Drew. And you know what? I've given that comparison to Maurice Jones-Drew himself, and he loved it.
Well, there you go. See, I got one right, John. I got one right.
No, I remember 10 years ago. I mean, it feels like 10.
I always liked Forsett. Even when he came out of Cal, I always liked him as a runner. Yeah, I did. You know, those guys you always wonder about. But, you know, I think theoretically, John, Hillman could be in that system because essentially it's an outside zone system. He's not driving it up inside. So, you know, theoretically he could be.
Yeah, I think Forsett's a little sturdier and a little thicker. So I think that helps.
Could be. Could be.
Yeah.
And
that's where you got
Hillman's a more explosive mover than Anderson, without question.
No doubt. Well, I think that's why he's been getting more work, because they need a spark. You know, they need some explosiveness and some juice, and he's definitely provided that for sure. But look, weather's getting colder and all that. Moving on to Philadelphia, Dallas. And I'm very concerned, Greg, very concerned.
What's your feeling about this, John, with the Eagles' offense in this game? How do you have this handicapped? I mean, do you expect the Eagles' offense to put up numbers?
I expect DeMarco Murray, and I know it's the quote-unquote revenge game and all that. I'm looking at like 30 touches for Murray, because the Cowboys are not going to run away and hide in the scoreboard with Matt Castle leading them. I have major concerns about Bradford in the passing game, which has been disjointed all year against the Cowboys. I think the Cowboys' defense is outstanding.
Well, unfortunately, with Matt Castle at quarterback, they're trying to find the scoreboard, not run away with it. I think that, to me, the big issue in this game is going to be the Eagles' O, Cowboys' D, because I don't think there's any question that the Eagle D will control the Cowboy O. The Eagles' D is a very good defense, and it's probably overlooked in some quarters just because, you know, the way the Eagles play offense is often not conducive to your defense. But, you know, it's not complimentary football, let's put it that way. But I think the Eagles' D is clearly the strength of their team, and I don't expect the Cowboys to score much. I mean, look at last week against Seattle. Watching that game on TV, and then, of course, I watched the tape, but I watched the game on television, I'm thinking, boy, McFadden's looking good. He's gaining yards. And then you look up, and he's got 20 carries for 64 yards, which if you told the Eagles now that that's what McFadden's going to get, they'll say thank you. So,
I think that's what he gets, too, by the way, because he's going to get 25 touches again.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, unless the score gets out of hand, which is why I think the other side of the ball is absolutely critical. And I think that, you know, I find the Eagles' offense really, this year, really difficult to sort of analyze and evaluate.
I'm to the point where I'm just going to assume the worst, and that's been a safe assumption this year, basically.
It has been. You know, certainly Bradford has not been overly sharp. I thought he had his best game in their last game. They don't throw it down the field, though, and I think they have to find a way to do that. you know, even if they're not complete, they've got to find a way to stretch defenses vertically. They have to. And
yep.
The Cowboys' defense is very good. You know, not talked about a lot because the Romo injury, the Bryan injury, you know, we know why it's not talked about. They're a good defense.
You know, DeMarcus Lawrence, you've got obviously Gregory, Hardy, Sean Lee with the speed. It looks like Morris Claiborne's playing pretty well. I think Carr.
Byron Jones is the name. A rookie from Connecticut, first round pick. They've now settled him in as kind of a safety in their base defense. He can play slot corner. He can line up and play man-to-man on tight ends. He's incredibly versatile. He's athletic. He's tough. He's willing to tackle. He's really sort of changed the look of this defense.
Yeah, that's a challenging matchup. I really think it's we're going to see a lot of Murray. That's what I think. And Matthews, too. But he's a little bit banged up still with his groin injury. He was limited, but he should be able to play here in week number 9. So let's move on to the final one here, and that is Chicago at San Diego. And, you know, the Chargers are trying for Melvin Gordon, but, you know, they tried last week, still not really happening. You know, in his defense, the O-line has been kind of a mess. But, you know, your Bear defense, they continue to play pretty well. But, Greg, I would still assume that Phillip Rivers will get numbers even without Mr. Keenan Allen.
I agree with you. But you know what's going to happen, John, and you're in the fantasy business, is all of a sudden Melvin Gordon will break a long one and he'll have 125 yards. That's going to happen one of these weeks. But
that'll
overall,
be week 17, Greg.
It could well be. But, you know, overall, he's not run well. We know that. I think on the other side, I think Langford is a pretty good bet this week. I really do. Because I think that they're going to run the ball. They're not going to make it a throw ball game. You can run the ball on this Charger defense, as we know. And I think they're going to give it to Langford. And, you know, his skill set, it's not as good, but it's philosophically it's similar to Forte's. He's a good receiver. I don't think they have to change how they play offense with Langford in the game. So it would not surprise me to see Langford put up numbers this week.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons Jay Cutler has been as effective as he's been is that they've been pretty darn committed to running the ball with Matt Forte to, you know, make that almost the foundation of the offense and not put too much on Cutler's plate and kind of pull back a little bit. He's delivered.
Yeah. I think Forte had the most carries in the league up to a certain, you know, until a week or so ago. He got hurt, obviously. But I don't think they're going to change what they do. Langford can play for 3 or 4 weeks as your feature back, without question.
And the thing about Langford is if you keep giving him the ball, he's maybe straight line-ish, doesn't really have lateral agility, but he does have speed. And, you know, if you keep giving him the rock, he'll let you. Speaking of popping one off, that kid can pop one off too, Greg.
Oh, and he's also used to being a feature back. He was in his last 2 years in college. So, you know, he has that mentality. So I think for 3-4 weeks, if that's what it is, I think they'll run essentially the same offense. They'll give Langford the ball.
And do you like Stevie Johnson as a replacement for Keenan Allen? I think one of the reasons they like Johnson is he is very similar to Keenan Allen, I feel. I mean, he can line up anywhere. I kind of see Stevie Johnson, who's not on the injury report, I believe. I mean, they're playing Wednesday. But I kind of feel like Stevie Johnson is going to get 6 catches a game now.
He might. I mean, they're still going to throw it, John. There's no question. I mean, it's not as if Rivers is going to drop back 17 times. He's going to drop back 35 to 40 or more times, depending on the game. So people are going to have – the ball will be thrown. And Stevie Johnson is going to get targets.
Great insight, as always, Mr. Greg Cosell. Follow Greg on Twitter, at Greg Cosell. And hopefully next week we'll get the high-fidelity audio back here, but we understand it is still about the content. And we'll figure it out, Greg. And we never have any technical problems with these podcasts. Actually, we always do. But we get it done, Greg. Thanks again for your efforts. For Greg Cosell, I'm John Hanson. We'll talk to you next week. Good luck in week 9.